You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Scoobies. Jess Morgan here for a little intro up top. Unfortunately, LaToya and I did not enjoy this episode of Angel. Season 5 continues to be a bit of a rocky road for us. But I'm not just here to warn you that we're grumpy, again, in this one. I'm also here to give you some content warnings. This episode of Angel on Top contains discussions surrounding the excessive use of insensitive and ableist language in this episode of Angel, often by characters we're supposed to like, which is a bummer. We also briefly discuss some implied sexual assault and abuse in the latter half of the episode, which we wanted to flag. All of that said, LaToya and I are looking forward to watching the back half of the season and hope you enjoy our nonsense as we continue. And now, without any further ado, Angel on Top.
Welcome back to Angel on Top, a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Angel, one by one, spoiler-free, and in tandem with no one. Everything has changed. We're all alone. I'm your co-host, LaToya Ferguson, a.k.a. the comatose chase of the buffering verse, a.k.a. one half of the gun squad. Your Honor, I request that opposing counsel be disqualified from this case because I do not know this man, a.k.a. the Gilbert to Morgan Sullivan, a.k.a. Daddy, even if no one can remember that, a.k.a. Captain Forehead, a.k.a. even more annoying new nicknames to come.
And I'm your co-host, Morgan Lutich, a.k.a. the Winifred Burkle of the Buffering Verse, a.k.a. the other half of the Gun Squad. Objection! Overruled. Who is he? I don't like this. A.k.a. the Sullivan to LaToya's Gilbert, a.k.a. missing the daddy era. Honestly, a.k.a. William Bloody, a.k.a. even more annoying new nicknames to come.
And this week, we're watching Angel Season 5, Episode 11, Damage. Damage was written by Stephen S. DeKnight and Drew Goddard and directed by Jefferson Kibbe. It aired on the WB on January 28th, 2004.
And this is the one where Spike and Angel are both after what they believe to be a possessed young woman, but is actually a potential slayer who is no longer looking so potential anymore.
So, as always, I must tell you the episode of Smallville that aired before this.
Hell yeah. Lay it on me.
It was the episode Delete, which guest stars Missy Peregrine as a hacker who can use code to program people. There's you got yes. Mr. Ian doing some kung fu against Lana Lang.
Yeah.
Because Lana is just like, well, Chloe has been programmed and Lana has to fight her back. And then Ian gets involved and...
Ooh, that sounds very I'll have to link good. To you
that fight scene. It's ridiculous.
I would like to see that fight scene, yes, please.
But yeah, she's working for a nefarious neurosurgeon played by Riverdale's Martin Cummings. Back in Sheriff Keller, back in his hot upper crust twink days.
Ooh.
This is the season right before they were both on one of my favorite one season shows, Life as We Know It.
Ooh, okay. Sounds very wonderful, yeah. But it's not what we're here to talk about today.
Is it not?
I wish it were.
It's, I will just say one more thing, is that these episodes of Smallville and Angel were both, like, up against basically reruns, but then they ended up getting really killed in the ratings because the one things that weren't reruns were American Idol for Smallville and The Bachelorette for Angel.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got them on those ones.
Whoops.
Well, but today we're talking Damage. And it's kind of like a big crossover event, some might call it. But I found it a little bit lacking, and I believe you did too. Any big thoughts on this one before we dive into scene by scene stuff?
Well, yeah, this episode has never been a favorite. I've always found it lacking, but now, you know, watching this and I can like articulate it better other than, you know. I don't care for it. It's not, I don't do like skipping of episodes and rewatches. So like not like a skip episode, but like probably when I pay less attention to you usually when I'm watching it. And I just fair listeners, it's not just because of Andrew. Andrew's kind of on the bottom of the list of my problems with the episode, actually. I think like at one point I just said, this episode is giving me like season one she levels of me wondering why I'm supposed to care, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also at the same time thinking about how insensitive this entire episode is to mental health issues.
What?
Yeah. Also, Navi Rawat, who plays what's her name?
Dana.
I wrote Dana 5 million times. You would think I would remember the name Dana of all names. Yeah. It was a Chad, yeah. Too. I would have noticed that too.
I wish there had been a Chad.
Yeah. But yeah, Navi Rawat, who plays Dana, our titular damaged character, she's kind of always left me cold as an actress. And in my mind, this episode happened like after her first season arc on the OC, but it actually happens before. We're not there yet in the OC right now, which is airing opposite Angel. So like she does this and then she does the OC where she plays Teresa, Ryan's Chino love.
Oh, I didn't even recognize her because she transformed for this. That's interesting. That's cool. Yeah, it's not to me a particularly compelling performance either, unfortunately. But I mean, I think that's largely because there's really nothing given other than like a lot of like River Song speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, and that stuff isn't really compelling unless... I don't know, like, your scenes can really slow down to, like, be with that person one-on-one. Like, it felt a little yada-yada to me. Mm-hmm. And again, like, and unfortunately, it just felt like such a product of Joss being around, for me, at least. Of like, yeah, and we'll just have, like, a girl who, like, has almost River's exact backstory.
Yeah.
Be around. And it just sucks.
Watching this time, I was thinking about how at no point in this episode, other than just like the bit where it's like, I think she said she like traumatized or anything, Fred has any like perspective on this character or story. And that's absurd to me. I get the idea of also having a Slayer pop up because so many were activated and that makes a lot of sense. But I think there's so many like writing issues with what they choose to do here and what it kind of says overall about that choice that they made in Buffy. And we can talk about that.
Yeah. It's not a particularly like optimistic viewing of what of the finale, which bums me out.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe, I don't know, maybe that's more realistic, but you want to dive in?
Yes. We open in a hospital, this year's girl energy.
Mm-hmm.
A PA system's calling for a psychiatric nurse, which means we're dealing with mental healthier, so yay.
Ooh.
Let's see. We've got locked cage doors.
We got the little bit about the crossword puzzle, which I enjoy. He's like, give me one of the clues. And she gives it to him. And he's like, give me another one. And
oh, I was fuck like, this guy.
I'm bad at stuff.
So, something's happening to a patient, Philip. He started convulsing right after he took his meds. And then we are revealed that instead of his lithium, he was giving Thorazine. So he's a manic depressive and he doesn't need a sedative, but he's the one who got the sedative where Dana didn't. So I don't know if Dana is lucid enough to have been the one to switch things, right? She's not, right?
I mean, I have no way of knowing. Like, we don't see this, and we don't know if it's a fluke or her design.
Yeah, we get no coloring or background on this mistake. And, like, yes, people make mistakes, but when characters do that, there has to be a reason. And so far, as far as we know, there's not. It's just a plot contrivance. So we're already starting off rough.
Yeah. Some action ensues because it turns out like Dana did not get her meds, so now she is trying to escape.
Yeah, some horror movie type banging, and then she's here, looking like she's from The Ring.
Yeah, she's ripping like doors off their hinges. She's doing a bunch of super strong stuff, and someone even like breaks a bottle over her head, and it has zero effect on her. And the scene ends with her like cutting a dude's head off with a bone saw. So you shouldn't fuck with her.
Yeah. So later in the episode, we're supposed to think she's possessed, and I'm like, the promo trailer for this episode definitely reveals she's a slayer. It also reveals Andrew with his terrible hair. You like his hair? I think it's terrible.
I like it more than the spikes.
So for Angel, you want the spikes, but for Andrew, no spikes. Please make a list of who should have spikes and who should not have spikes.
I will get that list to you very soon.
but they even use this promo to promote the next episode, which is the 100th. So, she rubs her blood on her face and that's there the whole time. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool, right?
Yeah. No. Meant to be primal of some kind.
That was very sarcastic and dry. I probably just cut that. I hate it.
I don't know. It's just, it so far to me feels like pretty generic, but we go to Wolfram and Hart, right? Gunn is walking.
Guest starring
and
Tom Lenk.
Ooh. I do like Tom Lenk, so.
Yeah,
I like it.
I should be happy to say special guest star Tom Lenk as Andrew, because then I would be like, I don't want to see his name. I don't want to see Andrew's name anywhere. But Gunn is lawyering over the phone as he walks through the halls. And Fred asks Gunn if it's a good idea to play chicken with the DA. And then I
woof.
Go off.
So do I. Gunn
says,
I do have.
Yeah. You want ugly, see us going out on the golf course. And I write in all caps, who is this man? Fred also asks, who is this man? You play golf since what?
I wrote in my notes in all caps, what white nonsense is this?
Yes. Because apparently a part of the brain upgrade that supposedly didn't change anything about Gunn, it was golf. They added golf. Oh my God.
And he
does say, talking about how so many of the cases are so, like, they do them on golf courses instead of actually in the court. And he says, sometimes you got to work the system before it works you. And Fred says, that's our new motto. And I'm like, yes, Fred, it's been your new motto for the past 10 episodes before this. What haven't you noticed?
Yeah. And Gunn is very insistent that they made the right choice here. And we cut to Angel, who says that he thinks they made the wrong choice.
But here's the thing. He says, end of the day, I think we made the right choice. And I'm like, do you think that? Or were you programmed to think that? Literally, who's to say? And it's like on Vampire Diaries when Jeremy Gilbert was compelled to be normal. What is the truth?
Who knows what the truth is? Later in the episode. So here I went in this next scene. I went kind of nuts.
Is it the same line where there's a line he says specifically where I write, oh my God, I hate you, Gunn.
Yeah. Let's get into it. So first they're talking about Eve and like how to deal with her, and Gunn defends her. By saying, she allegedly tried to kill Angel.
Yes, that's when I said, I hate you, Gunn.
Mine's a little later.
The parasite she allegedly sicked on you wasn't meant to be fatal. Who gives a fuck?
Like, like, that's an enemy right there. And so he says that, like, Eve is our direct line to the senior partners, so she isn't someone they should be messing with until they have hard evidence.
That is a
point. To which Angel replies, I liked it better when you just wanted to hit people.
Okay.
And Gunn says, logic, it's an acquired taste. I write in my notes, we get it. Old Gunn, big dumb meathead. New Gunn, smart and superior. I hate it. And
yeah.
It makes me really mad.
So my reaction to Angel's part of the line is, one, yes. Two, but these writers aren't allowed to make that joke when this whole Gunn thing is basically shitting on his character as having no dimensionality before other than just wanting to fight. And then, with Gunn's rational thought line, I write, in all caps, shut the fuck up. Gunn had rational thought before he was the most rational of any of these idiots. Like, but he was the most rational of all of these fools.
Yes. And it's ridiculous. And I got really mad. And I'm like, it also not only does this fuck up Gunn and like shit on everything he used to be in a way that is really annoying and also racist and aggravating and regressive and all of these things. It also like completely fucks the ensemble because now all three of them are the smart one. There's like nothing for Wes to do anymore. Like, and there's nothing like I got mad and I wrote my pitch about what should have happened. Mm-hmm. Would you like to hear it?
Also, real quick, nothing for Wes to do. That's why he shows up in the field with Angel, even though that should be Gunn in the field. But no, he's lawyer man now.
Mm-hmm. So here's what I wrote in my notes. This money should like the money and the resources that came with Wolfram and Hart, rather than him deciding to become a lawyer for the cause, this money should have allowed Gunn to become James Bond. Like when he did his Rush Hour job with Gwen, then we get Gunn and gadgets and he can still be seduced by all Wolfram and Hart can give, because clearly that's the story they want to tell. He can just also be allowed to be believably himself. And I was like, but that would be a budget problem. Morgan. No. I have a solve. It doesn't have to be a budget problem. He could just always be leaving or coming back or prepping for the cool shit. So we know that like Gunn for the first time ever is like doing a gig in Paris and doing all this stuff. And he's like, I get to leave for the first time ever. I get to see stuff like that. I could believe him being open to, because it would be like he himself was becoming bigger and better rather than him being transformed into a completely different person.
Every time they introduce a new aspect of this upgrade, it's like, it was just this, but also this and this. This motherfucker is playing golf. I'm sorry.
Like, that's not my beautiful boy. That is not my friend. My big conclusion was,
can
in
we
all
play
caps,
I'm sorry, is there a way to play a sad version of the Gunn Squad jingle? Like, just like slow it down an uncomfortable degree? Please?
Check that tux, check that bod. Sign me up for the Gunn Squad. Did someone say Golden God? I'm all in on the Gunn Squad. Gimbal playing, Gimbal King. Sign me up for the Gunn Squad. Even when he's curmudgeoning, I'm all in on the Gunn Squad. Bang, bang. Big old Charles gonna shoot his shot.
This is the episode that gets us canceled.
I know. I'm like, I'm trying to, now I'm going to be more positive. I'm going to be more positive from here on out.
It only gets worse.
I know, but I'm going to try. Witness my positivity. I write, we have too many fucking nerds here. Then Lauren makes a comment about how he's sad we're not busting Twiggy to bits.
Also, then suddenly Lauren's a genius too. Like, what the fuck? And then suddenly, like, Harmony has a monocle and she's also smart.
I would love for Harmony to be a genius suddenly. Gunn is like, you know, let's just keep an eye on her and restrict her access to stuff. And Angel's like, okay, fine, that's fine. And Harmony comes in and very poorly relays what happened at the psych ward. And she says that the girl who did it was possessed.
Here's the thing. Like, mm-hmm. So possession is like the tease. They like, for at least for the viewer, they kind of realize that she's not possessed pretty quickly when they start with her flashbacks. Because if you're possessed, you're not having trauma flashbacks. It's like, and this is something the show's done and we've criticized it, where it's like they reveal to the audience like something early. I'm like, well, now like the interest is kind of not there anymore. Even if you're not revealing what it actually is, it's like,
yeah. And I mean, for me, like, I read the logline on Hulu, so, like, at the end, all the wind was taken out of this episode's sails. And, like, I will say that is not fair.
Again, the promo for the episode, like, if you were watching the WB, like, you see what it is.
Dang. Yeah, that just kind of sucks. Like, it really robs it of a lot of, like, the mystery is kind of all that seems to have. But we then have, like Angel says, possessions are a finesse job. You know, you got to be really careful with them.
He says that, like, it's us around Wesley, who was there when he did the exorcism in the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, maybe Wes doesn't remember it. He doesn't remember what the, you know, if he had to keep track of what he's wiped out of these people's brains and what he's allowed them to keep.
He just constantly reminds them of things. He's like, I don't know what you remember or not.
Also think, like, Wes should be working, should know he doesn't know something. That is, like, another piece. Like, why doesn't Wes know, like, why is he not feeling around for the mystery and trying to solve it?
I pointed out, like, moments in, like, Alexis' performance where it looks like maybe he thinks something's wrong, but, like, I think that's just Alexis.
Yeah. So then in the psych ward.
It's a finesse job. Cut to Spike showing. Spike and Angel both come out of the tiniest elevators that have ever existed in a hospital.
It's a very cute shot of the two of them arriving separately in their tiny elevators. And they're both here to work the case.
Those elevators are so small. You couldn't push, like, someone in a wheelchair into that elevator. Like, it's too tiny.
It's not very accessible. So Angel, you know, is immediately annoyed and is like, shouldn't you be out in the streets, like, trying to protect this city from people like you? Pretty good burn.
I mean, he should. He's how much more trauma is he giving people just by insulting them as he saves them?
No clue. So then they both talk to the doctor, and the doctor's like confused why a lawyer is here, but he will answer their questions. He takes them to Dana's room. She has a bunch of spooky drawings because she was kidnapped when she was 10 years old, and the kidnappers killed her family and then took her somewhere for months and tortured her. Not great.
Yeah, she was found one day, naked and bleeding, wandering the streets, barely functional. Great.
Yikes. And so Spike is like, cool, sounds like a possessed girl to me, and leaves. And the doctor kind of like leaves the room, and Angel says out loud to himself, he telling me?
Well, before that, note that she has a bunch of drawings taped to her wall, and I'm like, oh, okay, maybe something Fred Bull be involved in this. No.
Mm-hmm. No. No, Fred.
Of course not. And so, but yeah, this is the first time Spike just bounces without getting any information. And you would think after the first time he wouldn't do that again. He does it again.
This is when Angel asks out loud, what isn't he telling me? And someone answers him very helpfully. The nurse is like, he isn't telling you all the sessions were taped. Thank you.
I mean, he was asking her.
I thought he was just kind of...
He realized it was her. That's he knew someone was there. He's a vampire.
Just kind of saying it out loud.
No, he uses his angelness to realize she was there.
Fair enough. he asks her and she answers. So all the sessions were taped. So we're going to get to watch all the taped sessions, which is, again, a like Firefly DVD extra on the Serenity like, Blu-ray is getting a tape of a bunch of Rivers sessions.
Dude, Firefly was canceled. I don't know why you think adding that stuff to a successful show would help it. This show got canceled too after this.
Yeah.
Way to go. This show got canceled 2 weeks after this. Thanks a lot.
Zoinks. So then we go to like a convenience store type place. Dana's
this
there.
Is a grocery She's, store, right? Like a full grocery store.
Grocery store? Okay, yeah. Just a grocery store isn't usually a rack of jeans, so I was not sure. So
like a department store then.
Fair enough. Yeah, there's okay.
Like a Target or something.
All right, she's at a Target.
She's at Kmart, I think. She's at Kmart. This is before they all died.
This feels like a Kmart. She's so
there's
Dana
always a rack of jeans there.
Dana's at a Kmart, and she's getting some clothes that are not a paper gown. Mm-hmm.
She also breaks an innocent dude's arm.
Yeah, some dude looks at her funny and like asks her a question, so she breaks his arm. Mm-hmm. And then a security guard shows up. And this is the high point of the episode for me. The security guard is Mr. Johnson from Abbott Elementary. I sent LaToya a screenshot of this and was like, I'm losing my entire mind. I thought the episode was about to start rocking and rolling for me. And no, this was the high point. But it is a pretty good high point for me.
Well, that's sad.
I was very happy to see him.
I was not happy for his fate because she killed him.
Mm-mm.
So we talk about how fucked up the loss of innocent life is in this episode, like now or later?
Whenever you want to talk about it. Like, there's a lot of death in this one.
Yeah. I'm surprised that, like, dude just got away with a broken arm because this is absurd. Hold on, let me find the exact thing. Yeah, I read in my notes that I was like, I'm just kind of bummed about like the innocent deaths in this one more than usual. It just feels so unnecessary, and it just also kind of feels to me like showing how negligent the Scooby Gang is at this point, and the fact that they sent Andrew to deal with this.
Yeah, and that like he doesn't seem to be particularly well equipped. Like he shows like at the end his girl army shows up,
which is
why wasn't the girl army here before?
Yeah, exactly. We're gonna get to that. Talk about it now. Like they should have been here doing things the entire time. He's like when he says thanks for your help. I'm like no, Angel and Spike even as a failure in this situation did everything. They didn't help you. They did all the work. You guys did jack shit. You just had like a bunch of girls flanking you so you could look fucking cool. Like so you could swing your dick around. You didn't do anything.
Yeah, which is just like then we're meant to believe, okay, is this a damning thing said about the Scoobies, or can we pin this just on Andrew? And we can't, because they sent Andrew out as a delegate, and like we continue to be like, Andrew, who's good now? And I don't feel that way. It's interesting how for a character like Andrew, who's a nerd, we can hand wave his evilness and he can cry once and be done with it. But like handsome men have to be sad about being evil, all having been evil previously all the time, and they can never fuck, which is an interesting thing Joss Whedon has on here.
Andrew's fucking, Morgan.
Hey, we don't know.
We know. Andrew's not fucking.
Yeah, he's probably not. But anyways, back in the psych ward, Angel sees the tapes, and Dana is very unwell in the tapes. She's rivering all over the place. She's saying a lot of half sentences.
Also, because the episode can't give me a moment's peace. I hate the fucking nurse too now. She tries to finagle her way into a Wolfman Hart job. That is her fault.
Oh, yeah, she does. I mean, to be fair, why would she want to work for this awful doctor? He sucks.
And she clearly wants to work for this evil place. Like, she knows. She clearly knows the deal.
Oh, yeah, you're fair. Her cousin's a paralegal there. Yeah. And, she's trying to angle for a job. And Angel's like, I'm trying to do, like, good. And then
she calls the foreign languages monkey gibberish, too. Like, fuck this chick.
Yikes. Yikes. Bikes here. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff being thrown around over like one, things that are mental health. Two, just calling a foreign language monkey gibberish. Not great. I don't know why. It turns out this woman is speaking, Dana was speaking Romanian in the tape, and Angel understands it. So
we know Angel knows that one.
He got a clue. Then at the Kmart, you know, the cops arrive after her attack, and Spike shows up on the scene and dips his finger in like the blood on the pavement and is like, oh, okay, I'm doing detective work.
He's lucky that's not Billy's blood.
Yeah, or else he'd be fucked. Then, or else he'd be the same.
That's no, the way, you know, Angel didn't change. Spike wouldn't change, but it's a scathing indictment of Spike. Yeah.
Then in Wes's office, he gets a call. It's Angel. He wants to check with the police informants and find out where, you know, triangulate a position on poor Dana.
Yeah, and Wes is reading up on possessions because we are acting like he has never seen one in person, apparently.
Mm-hmm. And Angel's like, that's not what's happening. There were drawings of demons in her room, some with a little girl. I thought it was Dana, but they're all different. It's not her. And Angel says it's not just the drawing. She was speaking a half dozen languages, and one of them was Romanian. Then at this like warehouse, like on a rooftop or something, Dana's looking out. She's seeing the city.
Another abandoned warehouse, because that's what the show is. We all know, at least.
Los Angeles is abandoned warehouse.
I guess if you go like downtown, you'll find some abandoned warehouses. You want to do it?
This many, though?
Let's go down to find some warehouses.
Well, yeah, let's go find a couple. Let's go buy. I bet we can buy one for real cheap.
If you're like downtown or like East LA, East LA's got some warehouses.
Yeah, I bet. So Spike, you know, is like, hey, you liking the view?
Okay. So here's the thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Spike. This man believes he can exercise a demon via brute force.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah.
What's happening here?
Yeah. And meanwhile, Angel has figured it out. She's not a demon. She's a fucking vampire slayer. We see Dana and Spike fight. Spike thinks, thinks he's going to punch this demon out of her, which is nuts.
He's like, come on out. I'm like, that's definitely not how it works at all.
Yeah. It's pretty nuts. She tries to stake Spike. He like kind of gets away from it, and then she starts speaking in Chinese, and we get the callback to, you know, when he killed that slayer. Sorry, love, I don't speak Chinese.
Maybe he should fucking learn. He would have figured this out sooner, the way Angel figured out, because he speaks Romanian.
Do one of those tapes, Spike.
You have nothing better to do.
And then she throws him out of the window, and he like lands at Angel's feet, which is pretty funny. And Angel says, what happened? And Spike says, oh, I thought I'd just see what it was like to bounce off the pavement. Pretty much what I expected. Tactical is on their way. And Spike's like, she's not going to fucking hang around. And Angel's mad because Spike didn't wait for him. And Spike says, you don't get it. I know what we're dealing with. He says, it's a Chinese demon, maybe a water dragon, or one of those elemental thingies. Okay. And then in Wolfram and Hart, they come back to Wolfram and Hart. She got away. Spike can't wrap his head around it. A slayer gone psycho. Very sensitive. And Angel's like, you let her get away.
Okay. I'm sorry. Just reading my notes, I got angry because I wrote, Wes contacted Giles, who sent his top guy to retrieve her. And that's why I just decided that, oh, my God. His top guy is Andrew.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. God, woof. So, yeah. So there, the boys are fighting. Classic. And Spike's like, well, I've killed a bunch of like slayers with my own hands. Like, now I know what game I'm playing. I think I can handle one that's gone, quote, daft in the melon, end quote. Yikes.
It's not even that the worst he gets here.
Yeah. And then Angel's like, I call Giles, top guy's being sent. The top guy is Andrew. He's got a pipe now.
Yeah, like in his imagination and storyteller. Now he actually got one.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's got a new look. And I like the longer hair and the more well-fitting clothes, even though this is still a pretty boxy suit on him. But he can't fool me. This is still a little dweeb who doesn't know nothing. Yes, he's so excited to see Spike. Yeah,
he's shocked he's alive.
Weeps and cries and holds him.
And then Andrew says, "We saved the world together. I mean, Buffy helped, but it was mostly us." Yeah, especially at this point when I was watching the series originally, I definitely hadn't forgiven the show for having him live over Anya. I still haven't. So, you know, fuck that line.
Yeah.
Angry episode.
Yeah, I know. God, I'm trying to be positive, but
I'm still going to be positive. Like, it's bad.
Yeah, it is. It's like, you know, he says all that stuff, like, and Angel's like, could we, like, get on task?
I'll also say, I'm realizing now that Andrew Spike stuff was actually done well on Legends of Tomorrow with Constantine and Gary, because characters on that show were, you know, actually queer. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The not queerness of Andrew continues to rear its head in this episode. Like, there's a lot of like him, you know, wanting to be close to Spike and wanting to be affectionate with Spike, and Spike, you know, not being interested in that, and it being played like seemingly for laughs. This like pathetic gay stereotype was a really popular archetype at this time and always really bums me out. Like, and I was trying to, like, concede that, like, okay, this is 2004. Maybe at the time, you know, we all would have been a little less tired of this. But it still doesn't necessarily work for me. But, you know, Andrew, you know, tries to tell them everything that they already know about Vampire Slayers.
Yes, he goes into story. Like, we know that. Yeah, he goes into storyteller mode. Amy breaks during this moment, which is pretty funny. Fred's looking hot as fuck again. Andrew's classic. Right, she is an attractive slender woman.
She absolutely is. He calls him like he sees him.
They know all the stuff he's saying, basically, except for something they definitely should know, and they should have a team tracking, and especially considering Angel talked to Buffy before and after the battle. Mm-hmm. And that is that all the slayers, potential slayers, were activated. Mm-hmm. And considering he knows she's in Europe, he would probably know why she's in Europe, but apparently not. This is the first time anyone on this team is hearing this information that all the Slayers were activated.
Yeah.
This episode, technically, because of that, should have been sooner, but the only reason it's now is because of Spike's corporealness and hero thing. But because they made it later, it does not work.
Yeah, it does seem wild that they're only now learning this.
That Wes hasn't heard this from, like, the streets?
Yeah, or, like, even Giles wouldn't tell him as, like, a professional courtesy.
No, Giles respects Andrew more than Wes, as this episode reminds us.
Yeah, that's it. It's just really...
At least this episode tells us.
Yes, this episode does tell us that, and it expects us to operate under that assumption. And I do just think it kind of breaks the world a little bit, like, and I'm not a little bit, like, a lot, like, it's asking you to believe something that just isn't at all realistic.
Yeah,
that, like, they wouldn't have been informed of this earlier, that Andrew is now a crucial part of this operation, like, and that he's here, and, like, I don't know, just, like, and he's big timing, like, our guys. Like, there's a world where you can tell a story like that with, like, a character, but it's not this
one. I hate to say it. It should have been Xander.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah.
Yeah. Wes asks how the new Slayers will receive training with the Watchers Council destroyed. That's where Andrew explains the premise of the comics. And, again, the reasoning of why Buffy would even be in Europe, which these characters knew. But no one questioned this. Right. Also, Andrew calls Dana an anomaly that no one could have foreseen. And I'm like, wait, why? Like, how could you have not foreseen this? Like, why did you not think there could be trouble with anyone who was activated to a Slayer? Because you did this without considering that anyone could become a Slayer. And, like, if you know Faith's issues, like, this is obviously even more extreme. Like,
yeah.
Already, like, our Scoobies aren't considering this, and we're not supposed to be criticizing that, even though that's something to criticize. And I think the comics do address this, but like, that's not what the point of this episode is. It's to instead criticize Team Angel, which we have been doing, but maybe this isn't the particular right messenger or way to do what we've already been doing this season.
Yeah, and so we go on to explain, like, Dana would probably be having, like, the dreams of things that happened to previous Slayers and visions. So when she was speaking Chinese to Spike, she was kind of embodying the Slayer he killed during the Boxer Rebellion.
But what's also says a line that doesn't quite make sense to me either, which is the dreams of Slayers are usually just that, dreams. It's like, no, they're often prophetic. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, but not visions, I guess, is what, like, he was trying to say.
I mean, technically, they kind of are.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But, you don't have them when you're awake. Like, you have them when you're asleep, I think, is what he's trying to say. Like, this feels different than that. But, I don't know. It's not that much of a distinction.
Because it's also, like, because they're technically also telling a multiple personality story, but they don't quite say it. But they're saying it. It's like, because... The fact that we also only just see her flashbacks and not, like, her having moments where she's seeing other Slayers flashbacks, that also money. This is a messily written episode by two heavy hitters, which I don't understand.
Yeah, which makes me feel like it was rushed.
Yeah.
Like, they were behind, and it was like, all right, make it happen now. Like, when two heavy hitters get put together on a script like this, at least in my experience in a room, it's because you're short on time, and you need two people to split a script because there's not enough time for just one person to do it by themselves. Like, there's so little time that one person isn't enough. So I would assume that they were very behind when they did this, and it kind of showed to me. Like, this whole thing has kind of a bit of a sheen of flop sweat on it. It's a very sweaty episode. But anyway, Spike is like, well, I'm leaving because I'm good now, as we all remember.
I'm sorry to make you go back again, because I just have to rant a little bit more. When Wes says Dana's mental instability may be making, like, the dream seem more real, fucking Andrew says, Mr. Giles may have been wrong about you. And, like, again, ha ha ha, right? But I'm like, no, I cannot see how Giles can tolerate Andrew at all and still consider Wes any worse.
Yeah, and it's just like, that's where I'm just like, I don't believe anything Andrew says.
Because even if you consider, like, just season three Wes as, like, Giles's memory, like, they've had conversations, like, like, Angel and Giles and Wes and Giles, like, he knows, like, what's going on over here. To think higher of Andrew.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
But it's supposed to be funny, right? Ha 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 ha.
Not quite working for me comedically. So Spike and Angel, you know, continue to bicker as they leave.
Because Spike, like, decides to fuck off again without full information or a plan. And what is, like, does he plan to kill her?
No clue.
What? Yeah.
No idea what his plan is, but Angel's like, look, we are the people who should be confronting her. She's a Slayer. She has we're the last two people who should be confronting her. She's a Slayer. She has every reason to hate us, and she's unstable. Yeah. In her mind, there probably aren't good vampires.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, imagine if Fred had any opinion on this, or if she and Spike interacted again past the Ghost Saga.
Yeah. Because it's also, like, it's so odd that Spike's like, okay, in quotes, Doyle, I trust you. And when that man has done nothing to earn his trust,
we don't know what Doyle's directive was. Doyle's directive was for Spike. Did he tell him to kill her? Spike's like, I'm going to stop her. How?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's like, I've killed two Slayers before, but he does not say I'm going to kill a third Slayer. Like, they really, it's as vague as humanly possible.
Yeah, he's Spike. He's going up off half-cocked. Yeah. He doesn't know what he's going to do. He just knows that he's going to end up on top.
He says, what do you want me to do? Go all boohoo because she got tortured and driven out of her gourd? And I'm like, yeah?
Yeah?
Feel any empathy?
Yeah. And he says, it's not like we hadn't done anything worse back in the day. And Angel's like, yeah, and I'm paying for it.
Yeah.
And Spike says, you should let it go. It's starting to make you look old.
But like the comparison to like the terrible things they've done, what she's doing now doesn't hit for me at all. I'm like, I don't know what like thread you're trying to connect between her deal and your deal.
Yeah. It's again, it's like, it's very tenuous. So, We go to the docks. Dana's got her saw. She is having these flashbacks. Dana's got her saw. Watch her with a saw. She's having flashbacks of a man who stored something in an old vent. And, like, there's syringes. There's all this scary stuff. It is not looking good. A good Samaritan comes and tries to help Dana.
So she murders him.
She murders him. Yeah. Angel and the gang are still working, and Angel's like, I don't know, maybe we should just go out there and find her. Spike could be right.
Yeah.
And Fred's like, and kill her for something that isn't her fault.
The only opinion Fred has on this entire scenario, which is
wild to me.
Yeah.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Do you like science fiction? I'm Carrie Bechet, and if you loved movies like Arrival or Interstellar, then you're going to want to check out my podcast, Hypothetical. On Hypothetical, we tell speculative sci-fi stories interwoven with real science. New episodes every Tuesday, available wherever you get podcasts.
Gunn is like, look, she's non-compos mentis.
Shut up!
I'm like, stop. I don't like this. Okay. You know, it's
mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they're saying, witnesses said it was like she was looking for something. And that is not a vibe I got at all in the grocery store. It's like,
yeah.
And I'm just like, this is both a writing and directing issue now.
Yeah, it does continue to be an issue in both places. So they are like, why don't we start like at the source, like with her home? And Lauren says, houses have long memories, Angel Cakes. You just got to know how to get them to talk. So they're going to go to her house and start there. But Angel says, let's get Andrew in on this and see if he knows anything. But he already left and he is with Spike. Spike and Andrew are, you know, Andrew's following along while Spike is trying to hunt this girl down. And Spike is, you know, like, has no patience for Andrew's stuff, except that maybe he cracks a little smile every once in a while, which, you know, their same dynamic continues. Andrew is very into Spike's Viggo Mortensen pectorals, which, I mean, a nice compliment as any. Spike's like, what the fuck are you doing here? And Andrew's ready for action. He's ready to be out in the streets. He's got guns in his coat.
As we learn, he's not ready for action.
Mm-hmm. He trips over something pretty much immediately after claiming to be faster, stronger, and 82% more manly than when you last saw him.
A dead body. And that's where I wrote about being bummed about the innocent deaths in this episode.
Yeah, Dana slit this guy's throat. Andrew screams.
It's supposed to, like, add stakes, obviously. You have, like, a dangerous Slayer out, but, like, it's just so much of a mess in general. It's a bunch of death on top of something messy. It's what it feels like to me.
And on top of our gang, like, still feeling like they're not on the right side of things. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, God, like, yet another problem going on in the city.
But also,
that's not being attended to.
Andrew could just have, like, 1 or 12 of the Slayers he brought with him here.
Do something. Yeah, it's wild. So then at Dana's, a realtor and Lorne and Angel and a psychic are going through this mid-sized home.
Not even wearing anything disguised, like, and it's not brought up at all.
Yeah, which I was very confused by as well.
But they also, bring up how the realtor is not telling them about the massacre that happened in this home.
Yeah, well, I mean, once it's 15 years ago, do they have to disclose
that? I believe they do, and I believe that's why it's for sale.
Oh, so she's like, hardwood floor, central air, original wainscoting throughout. She's a real charmer from top to bottom. And then the psychic who's walking around says, the walls scream with the blood of the innocent. And the realtor's like, I'm going to go hang out in my car, okay? Seller's market. And leaves. This guy, this shaman, or whomever.
Yeah, it's like he's Vernon. Let's see, what's the full name they have in the credits? Vernon the Creepy Psychic. That's the credited name of this character.
Beautiful work, Drew and Steve. He does all of Tom Arnold's readings. And I'm like, wow, it really is 2004.
That joke thud.
Yeah. So the psychic can pick up fear, anguish, pain. The attacker needed the family to suffer.
They let us see that the dude killed a baby too, because some real Angelus stuff.
Oh, zoinks.
Yeah, there was a crib and like there's blood like on a blanket. Yeah.
Jeez. Our Dana did not know this guy. She tries to be invisible, but he found her and, got her from under her bed and she got taken. And then, I understood how the psychic could glean that from this house. But I guess, magic-wise, I was again, confused as to how his powers could extend beyond this house and readings of it. But he can feel where she was taken when she was kidnapped. Its floor is cold, and it smells like molasses and dust.
Good to know. No idea how. Figured it out, but okay.
Okay. And then... as the psychic describes the place, Dana arrives there and she walks into the basement and the psychic explains that's where her pain lives.
Yeah, and this is where I realized the dude never got caught because like his weapons are all still there.
Yeah. So she goes to the air vent and like finds all the stuff in it. And there's like a bunch of tools and weapons and a bunch of syringes, which is you don't want to see. A bunch of loose syringes that are stored in an air vent. That's never gonna be good.
Open up your air vent right now, Morgan Ludich.
No, don't make me. Dana's like, cool, syringes. And I'm like, oh yes, this will go great. And she remembers her captor essentially seemed to just like inject her with shit. Willy-nilly, let's try the blue one this time.
I'm sure that's not just what he did, but the episode, for all it's going to do and not care about innocent people, it's not going to say the quiet part.
Yeah, and we see that her captor is Spike.
Yeah, so, the idea is we're supposed to believe Despicable Spike did this, but, he'd remember if he did, just based on the description of her backstory alone. And he probably wouldn't act like he is now if he had done it.
And it also just doesn't seem like his MO, you know?
Yeah.
Like he'd eat her.
Yeah, it's too much Dexter shit.
Yeah. Docs.
Months of him torturing a little girl, he'd be so annoyed.
He'd be bored. Yeah. Need to watch Passions. Andrew and Spike are back at the docks. Andrew says he mostly talks to Giles, but they all check in. Xander's in Africa.
I said this would probably be the one thing that finally cancels Xander Harris. Xander in Africa. Let's see how that goes down.
Oh, Willow and Kennedy are in Brazil, and Buffy, you know, ultimately ends up being in Rome. Mm-hmm. Spike smells some blood. He says it smells and tastes metallic like a penny. So Andrew sees a penny on the ground and almost puts it in his mouth.
Remember my notes? Now this idiot has tasted pennies.
Unreal.
It's like the movie theater. He's eating beans thing. He's tasting pennies.
He's tasting pennies. And Spike very subtly asks about Buffy. She's in Rome. Dawn's in school there. And Spike's kind of surprised to hear that. And Andrew's like, yeah, she was rounding up slayers in Europe and decided she liked it there, you know? And he spits out the penny. It's gross. She needed a break from California. And then he puts it together. Buffy doesn't know Spike's alive. And Spike's like, yeah, I mean, what do I say? Hello, Buffy, it's Spike. I didn't burn up like you thought. How are things?
And then I just like, the imaginary phone call he makes up isn't actually awkward at all. There's no reason not to call her other than the fact that Sarah Michelle Gellar, understandably, is not coming here. And Spike is not leaving here. It's like his excuse for like why he didn't go to Europe. But like, it's even like, even this one is like more ridiculous. It's like, no, the stretching they have to do because of the circumstances, like Spike's a series regular. Buffy is not going to show up here.
Yeah, she's not. Like, after like 7+ years of a brutal schedule as the lead on a 22 episode a season show, she
with
wanted
a toxic
to take a year
showrunner.
Off. Yeah.
She wanted to take time off from that man.
Yeah. So good on you, Sarah. Andrew's like, I don't know. Do you want me to tell her? Like, I'm good with that kind of stuff. He is not. Spike is like, please shut the fuck up. I'm begging you. And, you know, Andrew's doing some narration, classic stuff. And Spike is begging him to stop. And he is, of course, not stopping. Then in Wolfram and Hart.
Oh, yeah. And Dana's watching them from a roof.
Oh, and Dana's watching them. Then Teen Angel reunites at Wolfram and Hart. They're like, how did it go at the house? Angel says, I want to find the guy who killed Dana's family. His name, his past, his whereabouts. And Gunn says, the police never caught him. And Angel's like, well, we're not the police. Fucking find him. He says, Lauren, I want to know where he took her after she abducted her. The basement that smells like molasses. Like, let's figure it out. There's a joke about how he needs to start cracking the whip. And Lauren walks away and yells, Danny, we're going to need a whip.
Dan the man still being groomed by Lauren.
He is good to his assistants. Yeah. Lauren, hire me.
And then next scene, first note, oh, my God, shut the fuck up, Andrew. Like, he won't shut the fuck up.
Yeah, Andrew's, you know, talking about his exploits. And Spike smells that the blood is different and stronger.
And, to which Andrew says, like Nichols, and I did say, okay, funny. I didn't laugh, but I said, okay, funny.
You acknowledge, yeah. Look, Andrew's one good joke. they reach a dead end. There's a bloody streak on the wall. It's her blood, and Dana shows up.
The thing that makes me think maybe she was lucid enough to change like the files or whatever. Because this is a smart plan. She used her blood to draw them to a dead end. Yeah.
Yeah. She knocks Andrew out immediately.
It's kind of like the show doesn't really tell you like what her mental state is in terms of like how like lucid she is or how much like rational thinking she has, because it's nonsense.
It's because it has to be whatever works for the scene. And as a result, like, that's why I'd say like this actress is not given much to play, because she's largely a plot device. Like, there's no interiority.
She literally becomes a pawn at the end of the episode.
Yeah, it's a real bummer. Andrew gets kicked in the face again. She like tranks like Spike runs after her. She leads him into a trap. It's the basement that we presume smells like molasses. And Spike's like, all right, there's no getting away from me now. And I'm like, she's lured you into a trap.
No awareness. So, no awareness whatsoever.
So wild. So you know, Dana starts like repeating stuff that like the man who like kidnapped her is must have said, you know, doesn't hurt if you hold still.
And Spike says, you know, you're a real sack of hammers, aren't you?
Oof, it's just a bummer.
But he does follow it up with, hey, don't worry, I used to date a girl who wasn't all there. And I'm like, okay. He likes that, but also, like, what he's saying to her is not anything nice.
Yeah, it's weird. And Dana's saying, heart and head, stab the heart, cut off the head, only way to be sure. And Spike's like, yeah, Slayer shit, I know, yeah. And he's like, let me explain, you know, all the vampire stuff, memories kicking around in your head, I imagine it's tough, you know. But he says, because it sounds like you're past midnight on the crazy clock anyway. Like, Dana starts cowering and starts saying, please, no, I have to get home to my son, to Robin. So she's, like, having visions from the perspective of Nikki, the Slayer that Spike killed in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And Spike's like, oh, don't think about that. Stop thinking about that.
And then she calls him A.K. William Bloody.
Oh, shit. And he's like, no, you want to focus on what's real. Like, don't do that. No, Dana's beating the shit out of him.
I mean, yeah, what's real is that you are A.K. William Bloody. She's doing it right now. Congrats, Spike. You helped her.
Thank you. And she knocks him out with some kind of tranquilizer. And he starts passing out. And Dana says, yeah, yellow makes you weak. And I'm not weak anymore. And, you know. Very
yeah clever. And there are more flashbacks of Spike being the one to do this to her, and Spike's like, I didn't do anything to you.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's confusing, you know. Dana's saying, you know, daddy's gone, he can't hear you and all this stuff. And it's, you know, yellow makes you weak, brown makes you sleepy, she injects him with something else, he starts to pass out, and she says, you can't
one pill makes you larger and one pill and makes you small.
Oh, remember how good Matrix the Matrix is good. I wish I was watching the Matrix.
I'm just like, you know, Jefferson Airplane's a good band, and you're like, Matrix.
So Spike passes out, and he is, you know, at this girl's disposal, which, as we know, nothing good is planned for him. In the conference room at Wolfram and Hart, Gunn is like, the body was found here, like on 4th and Camden on the map. And Angel's like,
where is 4th and Camden? Do you know? No. I have no idea where these places are.
I assume downtown.
I assume, where all the warehouses are. Let's see if I do a quick search.
In the warehouse district?
Let's see. Century City?
What?
That's what it looks like from here.
You guys, this girl was not in Century City.
Yeah, it's like Beverly Hills, it seems like it would be.
Oh, yes. One of the many abandoned
whiskey
factories in Beverly Hills.
Because, like, 4th and Camden isn't a place, but, like, Camden. Like, 4th would be Camden downtown. Camden would be on the west side, though.
So Angel's, you know, like, let's get, like, people, like, let's get the surveillance up. Like, Lauren, any luck with the psychics? And they're like, no, nothing new. Cold, creepy, smells like molasses. And Wes is like, molasses factory?
well... Yeah, and then Amy says whiskey, and I'm like, okay, dollhouse. But the point is that she's from Texas, so she knows about making whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all Fred has to contribute to the episode.
When you're cooking up whiskey, it makes the whole room smell like molasses. And they're like, oh, shit. Then Andrew comes in.
Yes, I remember. Andrew's bitch ass ran all the way back to Wolfram and Hart.
Yeah, he's like, we were attacked. She got Spike. Spike wakes up. He is not doing so well. He asks, what did you do? And LaToya, what did she do?
She cut off his hands. But hey, she bandaged them up, so good for her.
Yeah, it was nice of her.
So he can't touch her anymore. Yeah. Again, they're not saying what happened, but like... we know what happened.
Yeah, which again, like, not that, and it's also like just for spookiness's sake, not for the sake of telling any kind of a story that matters or to delve into the interiority of this woman. So we go, we go to commercial, we come back. He's like, I can't feel my hands. And Dana, you know, is punching him. No more daddy, no more mommy, no more hands. Can't touch me ever again. And Spike's like, I never touched you. And Spike says, your brain's all jumbled. I never hurt you. It wasn't me. I've done my share of bad, but you're not one of them. It's someone else. And she finally starts to have flashbacks. And at first it seems like it's Spike. And then it finally starts looking like another man.
Of like the stereotypical creep you would expect it to be.
Yeah. And Spike's like, you've got me confused for another man. And Dana starts like, seeing it. Mm-hmm. And Spike's like, visions are mixing with your real memories. Like, you got them stuffed in your head. Other slayers, other places, New York, China. That's what you're remembering. And Dana, you know, realizes, like, through all of the things that she can see, says to Spike, you killed her.
Yeah.
Like, you killed both those slayers. So, you killed them both.
Yeah. Then she just starts beating the shit out of him for, like, the slayer killing, which, I mean, at least you're focused on the right thing now.
Yeah, but he answers that and worse, but I was never here. And she says it doesn't matter. Head and heart keep cutting till you see dust. And someone picks her up and throws her across the room. It's Angel. He's here to do the right thing. He's like, look, the man who tried to hurt you is named Walter Kindle. He tried to rob a liquor store 5 years ago. The police shot him. He's dead.
Which is, that does not sound like that creep's MO at all. So, like, talk about underwhelming. Like, no.
Yeah.
This man murdered a whole family, including a baby. He is not, like, knocking over a liquor store.
Yeah. It doesn't, like, fully track. But, you know, like, Dana's, you know, she's not okay. But she's starting to realize, like, can't hurt me anymore, not weak anymore. And Angel's like, that's right. And then we have some fighting. And Angel finally kind of like gets her held in place. And then a bunch of people trank Dana, and it's Wes. I was like, why would you let Wes take that shot?
I mean, he's Mr. Gunman.
I know, but still, I remember when there used to be a different Mr. Gun.
You mean Charles?
Cool stuff. Yeah. So they get her. Angel sees Spike, like, with his fucking hands cut off and is like, let's get a fucking med team in here. He's, like, pretty horrified by it.
And then I said, LOL, now Spike and Lindsay, who may or may not be part of the show right now, will have something in common. Although Fred even says to the shaman, no cadavers, which, hey, Lindsay's dude was alive still when he got that hand.
Fair enough. So we are wheeling him out. Fred is, you know, like, getting him prepped for surgery and into the medical transport thing.
She's a physicist.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
It's so wild. She gets in the ambulance with Spike, and then Angel and Wes are with Dana's gurney, which they're pushing. And Angel's like, let's get her in the van. I want armed guards with her. And Andrew is like, stand down. I'm going to take it from here.
Yeah. Enter a bunch of nameless, faceless chicks who could have been helpful this whole time. So now we can do a fuck watch, I guess.
Fuck Watch.
So literally my thought process for Fuck Watch was no one, none of them. Fred again? And then I was like, I can cheat. Amy breaking in that scene where Andrew's going storyteller. That's my choice. I've never felt less horny watching this show. And season 4 exists. So there you go.
Well, I'll be spending the night with Officer Mr. Johnson from Abbott Elementary. We're going to hang out, see where the night
Morgan's
goes.
Spending the night with a cop. You guys heard that, right?
Yeah, you heard
A-cab,
it.
A-cab, all cops are beautiful. Morgan just said that.
That's, you know, that's my whole stance, I guess. I love that this is out of pure love for Abbott Elementary that I make this call. So then Andrew, you know, says, like, I'm taking it from here. You know, appreciate your help on this one, big guy. Never could have found her without you. But you got a lot of problems of your own to worry
useless.
About. Useless. Mm-hmm. It's infuriating. And Andrew's like, she's a slayer, so she's ours. And Angel's like, fucking no. And Andrew's like, no, you didn't hear me. You think we're going to let you take her back to your evil stronghold? Like, no. And Andrew says, you don't have a choice. And I'm cutting out a lot of nerdy references here.
Yeah, I skipped that too in my notes. Because I'm like, I don't, shut up.
Yeah, and he says, I got 12 slayers behind me and not one of them has ever dated you. So she's coming
and
with
us. And I'm like, that line's also just disrespectful to Buffy. So shut up.
Yeah. And it's like Buffy wouldn't like not do what she believed was right because of Angel. And Angel's like, I'll go over your head to Buffy. And Andrew's like, who do you think my orders came from? Nobody in our camp trusts you anymore. Nobody. You work for Wolfram and Hart. Don't fool yourself. We're not on the same side. Thanks for your help, but we've got it.
And not help. They did everything. You did absolutely nothing. You did nothing.
Truly nothing. But Wes and Angel stand down. Angel says, yeah, she's one of theirs. They can handle it. Besides, you heard the man. We got enough problems of our own to worry about. Then we go to the like kind of like hospital room that Spike is hanging out in that I assume is still, you know, at Wolfram and Hart. And we have this scene, which I would say is my favorite scene of the episode. It's a nice kind of like quiet Angel and Spike scene. Spike's like, are you here to, you know, like rub it in? He has his arms reattached.
No, he's not, because that's not what Angel does.
Yeah, like Angel's first question is like, are you in a lot of pain? And Spike says, more than I'd like, but not as much as you would. Just what I deserve. Angel said, I didn't say that. And Spike says, no, I did. She thought I killed her family. Am I supposed to, what, complain? Because hers wasn't one of the hundreds of families I did kill?
No. Is anyone saying that? As good as the scene is, I'm like, I can't find the connective tissue between all of this discussion and the Dana stuff that they're trying to make. And I'm like, I'm so confused.
Yeah, when they're like, we're just like her. I was like, I'm not sure like that is connecting. But like the idea that he's like, I'm supposed to be upset about being like wrong. Like I got my hands chopped off for something I didn't do.
And I'm like, no one's
done a bunch of shit.
But no one's saying that. That's the thing.
But I think the thing is like he's grappling with his own desire to like throw it away and say like, I don't own it. Not my fault. Because I think that's the way that Spike kind of is. Like he's constantly like rebuffing responsibility. And I think this moment has made him have to sit in it a little more. Or at least we're seeing him in this moment kind of sitting in it. And I like this look on him. It's nice to see him kind of slow down. And he says, like, I'm not going to say you're right, but like, I never really thought about like the nature of evil. I threw myself in, thought it was a party, liked the rush, liked the crunch. I never looked back at the victims. And then I love that Angel joins in and talks about like Angelus's perspective on evil. Angel says he like couldn't take his eyes off the victims. He was only in it for the evil. It was everything. It was art. Now, this I really bought when they connected it to Dana this way. The destruction of a human being, I would have considered Dana a masterpiece.
Because, that's what he did to Drew, so.
Mm-hmm. And Spike asks what happens to her, and Angel's like, I don't know, like Andrew took her. And Spike is impressed that Andrew did a double cross. And Spike says, I don't know, the tingling in my forearms tells me she's too far gone to help. She's one of us now. She's a monster.
I'm curious, like, is there any medicine she could have been on besides just sedatives?
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, you also don't know, like, what can happen if...
Yeah, what is her diagnosis?
Like, that's the other thing.
There's no diagnosis in this episode.
There's no diagnosis, which I do think is like very common for stuff like this, so that you don't have to be beholden to anything, because a diagnosis would mean like rules.
Well, this asshole doctor was too concerned, more sort of like making a book and getting like rich and famous off of than actually helping this girl.
Which also was like, why is he going to get famous off of her? Like, she's not doing anything.
And like, yeah, you're going to get, because I guess she's, you know, speaking multiple languages and all this stuff and everything. She's like an anomaly, but also like, yeah, your book's going to talk about how you didn't do jack shit to actually figure out what was wrong with her.
Yeah.
Or help her.
Did not help her at all. And so this is the moment where they're talking about, like, we were both, like Angel says she's an innocent victim. And Spike says, like, so were we once upon a time. So it's this idea that, like, when does it end? And when does it stop is kind of the open-ended question that poses and where our episode ends. Is that at one point, you know, Liam and William.
I don't know that Liam was ever an innocent victim is the thing, though.
Yeah, fair enough. You know, we're preyed upon by monsters. But then became monsters themselves.
Mm-hmm. Because yeah,
and I do think
to call her a monster seems like they're saying there's more of an awareness in her with what she was doing, and there's not. Like, there's absolutely not.
No, like, this is someone who's like really hurting and needs help, and I do wonder, like, I do wonder what's in store for this person, but I also don't feel any attachment to her because I don't think the episode like personalizes her in any way. She's just like an object of tragedy. Mm-hmm. And like you said, she ultimately is a pawn for everyone to swing their dick over.
Yeah.
And it's a bummer.
Yep.
But I don't know. I mean, I'm hopeful. I'm really excited for next week. I am excited to get into like the back half of the season. There's a couple things coming up that I know we're gonna have fun discussing.
Yes, we'll actually enjoy discussing. Yeah,
thank you for listening to our very grumpy ep. We're gonna end it on a very high note by doing one of my favorite segments, which is WB Watch. LaToya, if Team Angel were to watch a little show on the WB after the events of today, What episode would you have that be?
I'm just going to say, I don't know how much of a high note it's going to be, but you queued it up that way. So here we go.
Angel is a vampire. Does he even like TV?
I think he'll like the WB.
They got that hot teen drama to ease the pain and trauma. And here's the episode that he needs to see.
So as we discussed, this episode wasn't exactly a shining example of mental health and mental health issues. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest something that did it well, very well. Everwood season 2, specifically season 2, episode 5, Daddy's a Little Girl, which isn't just the episode where little Delia says shit. It's the episode where basically, as the season began, Emily Van Camp's Amy Abbott, after the death of her boyfriend, Colin, she's spiraling into depression slowly. And basically, this is where her therapist recommends antidepressants, and she tries to get her dad, who's a doctor, to prescribe them to her, and he refuses to. And we are just going through a very downward spiral with this character. And I think it's probably one of the better, best depictions of like depression, especially for a teenager. On TV, because this arc, of course, leads her to meeting a bad boy played by Mr. Paul Wasilewski.
God.
And then
hey,
also
I'm
do
depressed. Why
they
can't
do the,
I meet a bad boy?
The bad boy
Paul
story
Wasilewski?
Very well, too, with a lot of interesting shading. So, yeah, I think just like a palate cleanser, really, because this is I don't like this.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, I like hearing you talk about something you like. So it's a high point for me.
Thumbs up.
And that is WB. So as we're wrapping up, this one wasn't for us, but hopefully one coming up soon will be. And in the meantime, you can follow us on socials at Angel on Top Cast on both Twitter and Instagram. You can go to angelontop.com to be sent on over to our Patreon. There you can get ad-free episodes and bonus content such as Cole Turner cast, LaToya and I's podcast about the main character of Charmed, Cole Turner. It's really goofy and fun and has guests such as Kristen and Jenny. So you should check it out. And we are, we really like those episodes. So we're having a lot of fun there.
Yeah. If you want to hear us have fun and be filled with joy, that.
I would say that, or I would say go on over to the Empire Diaries pod. But, I would say that if you want to follow me online, you can find me at Lorgan Mudich on whatever platform interests you. I got a Twitter. I got an Instagram. I got a dang Letterboxd that I like. Those are really fun, so follow me on those. LaToya, where can the people find you, and should they?
I don't know. I feel like people are going to be weird after this episode, so know where to find me. If you don't, then don't.
Yeah, be nice. Also, on our Patreon, you can have access to our Angel on Top Discord, which is a really nice place where we can talk to fans. And we've been having, I think, some good discussions about season 5 in our little season 5 channel. I know there's been some requests that we do some more spoilery coverage, given certain things about the nature of this season. But since that isn't really what we do, that's kind of a place to have those conversations with, like, other Scoobies and even a little bit with us. So I would check that out if that is something you are hankering for. And I don't know. I really liked this last scene, and I really liked that Mr. Johnson from Abbott Elementary was in this episode. So on those two positive points, I will tell you that you are now leaving Wolfram and Hart, and no, we do not validate.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.